And welcome back to another edition of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside, of course, my terrific co-host, Jonah Tolles. Jonah, how's everything going today?
Man, everything's going good, dude. We are one day out from LSU-Bama, and it's hard to contain my emotion because this is going to be, I think, the biggest college football matchup of the decade. That's in the regular season. That really doesn't have, you know, that's not the national championship or nothing, but it's one of those things that I think it's like the pseudo-national championship tour. This is one versus two, the best two quarterbacks in the nation, the best two secondaries in the nation. It's just, it's going to be a great matchup, and I really can't wait for it, especially from a scouting perspective.
Yeah, and this is the matchup that everybody wants to talk about. Number one versus number two, in a sense, with the LSU, Alabama, the showdown in Tuscaloosa. I know both of us are super excited about it. There's so many individual matchups, and that's something that we will get into in the second half of the show. And if you missed yesterday's show, we went over Alabama's offense versus LSU's defense. Now, today, we're going to flip it with LSU's offense against Alabama's defense. But we're also going to get into some Senior Bowl invitations that have been accepted already. So with that being said, we're going to get into Josh Uche, the edge rusher slash linebacker from Michigan. He's really a jack-of-all-trades type of a player for the Wolverines defense. And also Brian Edwards, the receiver from South Carolina. So those will be the two guys that we're talking about. But the second half, or the second segment, I should say, we'll get into LSU's offense versus Alabama's defense. So with that being said, I want to talk about Josh Uche here really quickly, a guy that we're both a huge fan of. But they're using him primarily as an edge rusher for the most part, and you're seeing some of those bendy traits. He's very quick off of the edge, very advanced hand usage, and he wins off his athleticism for the most part. But he's really shown some really nice tools this year, and I think he's really taking his pass rush plans to the next level, and the Senior Bowl obviously took notice of that. So what's your overall thoughts on Uche?
Man, you know what the first player is that I think of when I watch Uche? It's Uchenna Nwosu from USC a couple of years ago.
It's a really good comparison.
Because you see him, he's a little undersized, and you're thinking, well, you know NFL teams aren't going to value him like a true edge because of that lack of length. But he, every time you watch him, he's just always in the backfield making plays or making some sort of disruption in the backfield. And that's the same thing I saw with Nwosu. Nwosu is always out there making plays. So he has such a quick first step and explosion that really offensive tackles couldn't guard. And you've seen Nwosu have some success in the NFL, I think, because I think a lot of people, a lot of people in the NFL devalue that lack of length. They say, those longer NFL tackles can really, have their way and control those guys. But sometimes they're harder to block because they have that, reduced surface area to kind of, put your hands on, kind of engage with contact. And Nwosu, I think, is really, really benefited. I think he's really had some success that can really pave the way for a guy like Uche, who otherwise wouldn't be, highly valued. He won't be a first-round pick, but he's a guy that you have to take seriously with his pass rush value. I think he could really show that the Senior Bowl in his one-on-ones. And it's going to be really interesting to see where he weighs in at, because that'll be the first day of the Senior Bowl we're really going to keep an eye on is those weigh-ins. And that'll be a big day for Uche, but above all else, man, if he shows up at the one-on-ones, I think some NFL team is going to have a plan for him, just like a Nwosu, and they're going to say, hey, we're going to put you in a situational pass rusher, and you can get us 5 to 8 sacks a year. We hit on that pick. And that's why I think Uche could provide for an NFL team. I really like his skill set, and I think he is the epitome of what you want in a day two kind of chess piece pass rusher, in this draft class.
And we talk about players that the Senior Bowl really is suited for. That's what we talked about yesterday with Bryson Hopkins and the other players that we talked about for the most part. And I think Uche, it definitely is another player that falls into that category, just because with those one-on-ones, I think he's going to take advantage of his twitchiness and how quick he is up the field. And that's really a drill that really does suit his skill set. Now, we'll see how he does hold up as a run defender. I do have some questions there with him and just how quickly or how stable he's able to maintain his ground as a run defender. But Michigan has also used him some at will linebacker, and I think that's definitely a place that could be his calling card, especially on passing downs. He's shown to be very fluid in coverage, and that's something that I didn't know previously about him, and that just how fluid he was out in space. So like you said, he could be that ultimate chess piece that is not only utilized as a pass rusher, but also out on the perimeter as a will linebacker. Have you seen some of those clips with him at linebacker? He looks super fluid.
Yes, and this is one of the questions I wanted to see was that if a coaching staff, whoever coaches, you know, Uche's side of the Senior Bowl, I would like to see him in an off-ball linebacker role, kind of like how Hassan Reddick was used. And I really want to see, you know, if you remember Hassan Reddick at the Senior Bowl, they kind of played in both spots, and I think that kind of helped his draft stock even when the Cardinals took him in the first round. So I want to see if Uche's moved, you know, around a little bit at the Senior Bowl, because if he can show that position flex, that will only help his draft stock.
Without question, we definitely will keep an eye on Uche. But the next guy I want to get to, Bryan Edwards, the receiver from South Carolina. And it seems like he's been in South Carolina forever just because he technically has. And he's a guy that he's gotten better every single year he has been there. But the one thing I do love about him is that he has that muscular build that you look for in wide receivers. He plays exactly how his body type looks, and he really turns into a running back in a sense after he does catch the ball. And the name that I wrote down for him was Demaryius Thomas. And I think they have a lot of similar skill sets. And that what I mean by that is they have very strong hands at the catch point. They're not overly burner types that's going to burn guys deep for the most part, but in the short to underneath or intermediate areas, I should say, I think that's where his home is for the most part. But I think he is another player that is going to be absolute. He's going to kill the one-on-ones. I can't think of the word for it just because he plays so strong. He's so competitive at the catch point, and then he understands how to get open as well. So Bryan Edwards is definitely another name that I have a red star beside to check out down at the Senior Bowl, specifically in the one-on-one situations. But I want to get your overall thoughts on him as well.
Yeah, and I think the one-on-one, we talk about this all the time. The one-on-ones are especially important for these big wide receivers with questions of separation. That's why we want to see guys like Colin Johnson go to the Senior Bowl. Antonio Gandy-Golden from Liberty. This is another guy we've talked about as guy who we want to see get separation against man coverage. That's one of the big questions we have about his game. Bryan Edwards is the same thing. We know Bryan Edwards has strong hands. We know he's a great player after the catch. But the biggest question that will be tied to his draft stock is how fast he runs at the combine and how well he can separate these one-on-ones in Mobile. So I think this is going to be a very important week for Edwards and his draft stock, simply because he carries that big wide receiver kind of narrative, and that, you know, that whole thing about him and his physical profile. He has all the, you know, the size and the physical things you look for, but in terms of his just his speed and his separation against man coverage, he just hasn't really showed that at South Carolina. And Jim Nagy's talked about him as a really tough dude, and I do not doubt that at all. But unless he shows some sort of, you know, speed or separation in the pre-draft process, he's going to carry that stigma of being that big wide receiver. So he has a real chance to make some money at the Senior Bowl and at the combine in this pre-draft cycle and really rise up draft boards. But if not, he's just going to be viewed as like another guy like Kelvin Benjamin, or this guy who has good hands, strong after the catch, but not really a guy who's going to consistently separate against man coverage. And with how athletic these cornerbacks are today, it's going to be hard to draft someone high, at least in the top 100. For a guy who can't separate.
And I think of any player that accepted their invitation today, I think Bryan Edwards is the one that can gain the most money from the event, and for every reason, like you just said, just because he has some troubles with separating, and I think that's the biggest question remaining about him. There isn't a whole bunch of questions about his catch consistency. I think that's one of the stronger parts of his game, and he really plays to exactly how his body looks, and his strength-wise, and strength levels are very high. But as far as being able to create separation down the field, I think he does struggle to get in and out of breaks at time to time, it's specifically in the underneath the intermediate areas when he has to run multi-directional type of routes instead of just running straight line down the field. That's really an area where he does have some questions to answer. But Bryan Edwards definitely is a name to keep an eye on, and one that we both definitely will be keeping a close eye on down there in Mobile. And I cannot wait to see exactly how he performs down there. But before we move on to our next segment, I want to remind the listeners about Peloton. Peloton is offering a limited time offer. You can get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code Locked On to get started. Again, that's onepeloton.com, and that's Peloton, and use the promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON to get started. And the segment that everybody has been waiting for, that is LSU's offense against Alabama's defense. And I think of either side of the ball, I don't think it's as intriguing as what we talked about yesterday, but there still are some really good matchups on this side of the ball. And of course, we have to start with Joe Burrow, the guy that really everyone likes to say that really came out of nowhere. But I don't think that's really the case, just because I thought he finished really strong down the backstretch of last season and has really carried over into this season. And of course, he didn't play at this elite level last year, but he showed some really good flashes, and he was labeled as a mid-round quarterback coming into the year, but that is far from the case so far this year. And he's positioned himself to definitely be a top five selection, and if he's able to have a really good showing and even win the game against Alabama, I think he may be in the pole position to be the top overall pick, snatching that away from Tua. But that's still a debate that we're going to have back and forth all the way up until April. But I want to get your overall thoughts on Burrow first.
Yeah, and we've talked about Burrow in the past. This is a guy that, you know, went from undrafted and like late day three guy, you know, in the summer, to a guy that all of a sudden is legitimately in the running for the first overall pick. We have never seen this in recent NFL draft history. I can't remember the last time I even remember this in NFL draft history. Burrow just completely shifted the narrative on his draft stock. And deservedly so. This guy has been phenomenal this season. Decision-making-wise, he's getting the ball out to his weapons, making them, having them make plays. He's not afraid to stretch the field vertically. He's throwing with nice placement on the short to intermediate routes. This is a guy that really has shown everything you want in a guy, in a quarterback prospect. Arm strength, arm talent, ball placement, poise in the pocket, athleticism to maneuver inside and outside the pocket under pressure, and just improved decision-making. This is a guy that has really just stepped up to the plate, and he's one, I think, one of the two Heisman favorites right now with him and Chase Young. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he goes up against Alabama defense, because it's clearly the best pass rush he's played against and the best secondary he's played against, which we'll get to later. But this will be the ultimate test for Joe Burrow. I know he's already played some tough opponents in Texas and Florida, but neither team matches up to what Alabama offers on the defensive side of the ball. So this will be the ultimate test for Burrow and his projections to the next level of whether or not he can surpass Tua. Because if he rises up to the challenge, I think he's the Heisman, and I think he's the first overall pick.
And we've seen how the Heisman really is a quarterback, running back, and wide receiver award for the most part. And everyone's saying that Joe Burrow is the front runner, but I think he has some competition with Chase Young right now. And I think those guys are the clear-cut one and two, or 1A and 1B in a sense. And if Joe Burrow is able to have a Heisman type of moment in this game, I think he definitely could put himself at the top of many voters' ballots going into the Heisman Trophy votes. And if he's able to have a good showing in this game, you talk about a hype machine that's going to go off the rails, just because everyone likes to see that prospect that really comes out of nowhere. We saw it last year with Kyler Murray, and also in previous years with Quinnen Williams as well. Guys that typically come out of nowhere and they end up being these top five selections. And that's exactly what Joe Burrow is doing right now. Even though he hasn't come out of nowhere, I would say, like some of those guys have done in years past, but we haven't seen a player's development have such a uptick from their junior to senior seasons, like you said, and probably ever, especially a quarterback prospect. We haven't ever seen this before, but this is a huge moment for Joe Burrow. But the next matchup that I have a lot of interest in, of course, is the LSU wide receivers and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson against the Alabama cornerbacks and Trayvon Diggs and Patrick Surtain and Xavier McKinney and some of these other DBs that they do have on this Alabama secondary. I think this is a fascinating matchup, just because Ja'Marr Chase, we know how good he is as a freshman. Justin Jefferson, excuse me, has really come on here this year. And Trayvon Diggs has bounced back really nicely from injury. Patrick Surtain has had his rough patches here in a sense, but he is very talented as a freshman. Xavier McKinney has filled in very nicely in that safety role. So this is an intriguing matchup. And of all the matchups this weekend, this is definitely one that will have my eye the most. But let's start first with the LSU receivers and Justin Jefferson. Ja'Marr Chase obviously isn't draft eligible. So what is your overall thoughts on Justin Jefferson?
Yeah, so Jefferson is another guy that's really risen up the ranks of the wide receiver rankings, because if you look in the preseason, I guess, rankings at the Draft Network of all our colleagues, Jefferson was nowhere to be found in these wide receiver rankings. And all of a sudden, with a big season with Joe Burrow, he's kind of risen and kind of, you know, he's right at momentum, you know, with Burrow as his deep threat. And the guy's really stretched the field vertically. His speed is something that I think is something that's popped out on tape. his ability to win vertically, stack cornerbacks over the top. This is a guy that's, I think, a really smooth player. He's a smooth mover, and it's going to be interesting to see, I think, how he handles the press coverage of guys like Trayvon Diggs and whatnot in this game, because that's his, I think that's Diggs' strength. And I think it's one of the biggest question marks I have with Jefferson is kind of that play strength at the line of scrimmage and handling, you know, his release package against press coverage. So that'll be a great matchup to watch. But Jefferson, clearly one of the most talented receivers in this draft class, and he's proven that time in and time out this season.
Yeah, and I'm really see exactly how Jefferson does in this matchup, just because I think he's favorable in kind of in a lot of these matchups, especially going against Patrick Surtain the second. And I don't want to say Surtain isn't really up to par in this matchup, I would say, but I think the way that Justin Jefferson is able to get open, I think he can have his way with Surtain. But those two guys are definitely going to be going against each other a lot. But on the flip side, I want to talk about these Alabama cornerbacks, and we've already talked about them a bit. And, of course, Trayvon Diggs, I know you're a huge fan of him and his ball skills and how fluid he is. So with you being the resident cornerback guru, I should say, Trayvon Diggs, what is your overall thoughts on him?
I love Trayvon Diggs, and I have since the very beginning. This is a guy that I declared last year that if he declared last year for the 2019 NFL draft, he would have been my top cornerback in the class, even with the torn ACL and the knee surgery and all that. Because you watched that Ole Miss game from last year against that talented trio of wide receivers, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, DeMarcus Lodge, all pros. This is a guy that really held his ground and really just, I think, locked up each player he went up against that game. And that, to me, showed that not only does he have the NFL speed to match up with those guys, DK Metcalf, 4.33, AJ Brown, 4.4. These are guys that have legit NFL speed. He was able to stay on top of them vertically, laterally on AJ Brown and his routes, and he was able to challenge DK Metcalf two or three times consistently, just at the catch point. And this guy, I think, has all the athleticism, the size, and the man coverage traits you could want. I think there are certain things you want to shore up with him in terms of his technique. I think he can get a little trigger happy at the line of scrimmage, if that makes sense, by him lunging or, you know, playing with his hands a little too, early lunging. But this is a guy that I think really has a good sense of how to play the catch point, and he has a good understanding of how athletic he is, because he knows that he can recover, and he knows that he can really, I guess, make plays at the catch point that other players can't. And he has a good understanding of his traits. I'm a big fan of Trayvon Diggs. This is a guy that I think is only built upon what he showed last year. And it was only in flashes, right? Because with Trayvon Diggs, he only played like a couple games last year. So if you're pretty much making a big risk by saying he would be the top quarterback in that draft class. But now, coming back to this year, he's really answered all the questions I had about him. Because really, the case I made for Trayvon Diggs in the preseason was that even if he doesn't play another game for Alabama, I know he has all the traits. It'll just be the injury concerns and the lack of production you see on the field. But you know the traits are there. He's answered both those previous questions this year. He's looked durable. And he's been super consistent production-wise in terms of attacking the ball, with multiple interceptions, including a pick six. This is a guy that has really translated his traits into production in his senior year, and it's paid off big time. And I think he's the clear second-best cornerback in this draft class behind Jeffrey Okuda.
And I 110% agree with you. I'm excited to see how these guys, specifically Trayvon Diggs, matches up against these LSU wide receivers. But before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back, and I want to talk about the other cornerback briefly. Or I should say, let's talk about the safety, Xavier McKinney. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Patrick Surtain just because he is not draft eligible. So I want to talk about Xavier McKinney, and I want to get your opinion on him as well, just because I think he's kind of been the forgotten man in the Alabama secondary, and it just seems like if you're good in the Alabama secondary at safety, you have to wear the number 15 for whatever reason. Ronnie Harrison was one guy that was very successful with the number 15 in Alabama secondary. And now Xavier McKinney is the next man up, and he's done a really good job this year. And like I said, he just seems like the forgotten man in this secondary. And Surtain and Diggs get a lot of the love, but McKinney has been steady Eddie back there. He's been very consistent, very good run defender. I have some questions about him as far as in his pass coverage and his deep zones. I think he's more of a strong safety in the sense that can cover the underneath areas. I think that's a better spot for him as a strong safety as opposed to a free. But just what's your overall thoughts on McKinney, and where are you at with him right now?
Man, I really like him. And it's almost like deja vu because Alabama has like the same sort of guy come out every single year. And you remember Micah Fitzpatrick from a couple of years ago, watching him come out of Alabama and how he was like a Swiss Army knife, a do-it-all kind of defensive back for the Crimson Tide and Nick Saban. That's like the epitome of a Nick Saban cornerback who can really just do everything. That's Xavier McKinney all over again. I don't think Xavier McKinney has the physical traits or like the pure natural talent that Minka had. And I don't think he'll get drafted as high, you know, in that regard either. So I think Fitzpatrick was more naturally gifted and talented than McKinney. But McKinney has the same sort of skill set, right? McKinney can play strong safety. He can play nickel. And I think he can play free safety with his instincts and his awareness. I don't think he's had enough experience there to kind of make that his primary role. But if you ask him to do it, I think he could end up evolving that kind of player. But I think his sweet spot is going to be down in the box, either as a nickel or as a strong safety, because his ability to help and run support as a primary run defender, you know, either as a blitzer or a guy who could just be a contained guy coming downhill, he's excellent at that. He's a guy who's basically, you know, he's a run and chase guy. You put a target on him, and he's like, all right, go get him. He's going to get the job done. And this is a guy that plays with, you know, I guess some control while also being physical. So he has kind of the best of both worlds, because when you look at guys like, it's like in the past, you look at guys like Keanu Neal coming out of Florida. This is a guy who played a lot of physicality, but not a lot of control. And you saw a lot of missed tackles on his Florida tape as a result. Same thing with Carl Joseph coming out of West Virginia. Xavier McKinney's kind of different. He plays that kind of blend of physicality and control to where he can come downhill and light someone up, but at the same time, he can change speeds in his tackling and make a solid open field wrap up. So I'm a big fan of McKinney as a run defender. Then we look at him in man coverage. This guy is the best man cover safety in the draft, even more so than Grant Delpit. I think this guy, as a true cornerback like skill set, and that's going to appeal a lot to teams like the New England Patriots, who really value their defensive backs to play all positions in the secondary. I could legit see him going into the bottom of the first round to a team like New England or San Francisco, another team that values defensive back versatility. So McKinney's position flexibility at defensive back is really going to help him next April if he declares for the draft. And it's something that I want to watch closely in this LSU game, especially if he matches up against tight ends or wide receivers, how he really fares in those matchups, especially coming downhill against that LSU running game. It's going to be a big game for Xavier McKinney, but it's that position flex that will help him the most next April.
Another player that has a lot on the line, specifically with McKinney, if he's able to show his positional and coverage flexibility and versatility in this game, he can make himself a lot of money, just because he was seen as a first-round selection coming into the year. Now you really see him slipping probably in the earlier parts of day two and the middle parts of the second round, I should say. I think that's a fair range for him. You really don't see his name a whole bunch in the first round of mock drafts anymore, like you did see about a month ago. But, of course, we have to go to the trenches next with the LSU offensive line, led by my guy Lloyd Cushenberry at center. And what I love about Cushenberry is just how athletic he is. He's very smart, and he just seems like he loves playing the game. He's always upbeat. He's very competitive when he is out there, and that's something that you notice about him on film. He has the respect of his teammate. He's been voted as a team captain. He's been elected to wear the number 18. Of course, he plays offensive line, so he can't wear that number in games, but he does wear that sticker as a shout-out to that number that LSU means a lot to. So kudos to him. I'm a huge fan of Lloyd Cushenberry, but he's going to be faced with a tough matchup led by Raekwon Davis in the Alabama offensive front. I think this is the resume game that everybody wants to see from Cushenberry, even though I thought he did okay against Auburn and Derrick Brown, but Derrick Brown makes everybody look silly with just how strong he is. So that really was, I don't want to say an unfair matchup for him, but it was very tough for him to hold up, just because I think he's more of a zone scheme type of offensive lineman, and Derrick Brown was just able to overpower him and just test his anchor a lot. But I think with Raekwon Davis, who's, I wouldn't say a similar player to Derrick Brown, but he's nowhere near as twitchy and gets up the field as rapidly as Derrick Brown does at that nose tackle spot. So that'll be the matchup I have a very close eye on between Cushenberry and Raekwon Davis. We'll see how much they go against each other, even though they do align at different alignments for the most part. We could see Raekwon Davis be transitioned inside from time to time. They have done that with him, especially on passing downs. But I want to get your overall thoughts on just this LSU offensive front against this Alabama defensive line, and who are some guys you're going to have an eye on in this matchup?
Man, for me, all eyes are on Raekwon Davis. You mentioned it, man. This is a guy that I think, looking at his physical profile and what traits he offers, this is a guy that I think is as talented as any defensive lineman in the country. We saw this with him early on in his career at Alabama, with his sack totals, I think 8 sacks in his sophomore year, or his freshman year, sophomore year. And he's only had 1 sack since, I believe, or somewhere along those lines. The production just hasn't been there. And I think you're starting to see, you know, it's like the same question we had with Rashawn Gary last year. It's like, if you're so talented, why isn't your talent translating into the box score? And I understand there's more to scouting and there's more to that than the box score, but really you want to have a best of both worlds. You want to have the traits and you want to have it quantified in the box score. You don't want to have just one or the other. And to me, all I see right now in Davis's resume is just traits. And I want to know, like, did he peak early on in his career at Alabama? And has he grown at all as a player since that time? And I think this is a game where he can really make a statement and say that this LSU game is a big challenge for him, because he's really, I guess, slid down boards ever since that big season he had early on his career in Alabama. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you love the physical traits. You love his size, his length, his power, his ability to get upfield and offer some pass rush value and disruption. But it's just not translating in the box score, any type of a sack production. And if he can have like a 2 sack performance against LSU this weekend, it will go a long way for rekindling his draft stock and his momentum as an early round pick. Because unless teams see him do that, people are going to, and I hate to do this, but people are going to start tagging him as an underachiever because of how well he did early on in his career and how he's kind of fallen off in terms of production wise. I think he's going to be a fine NFL player. But in terms of where he gets drafted, he needs to have big games like this against LSU to kind of rekindle that momentum around his draft stock.
And I 110% agree with you there. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I had my microphone muted and I was talking. My bad. It happens. But I was going on. I was going on about Raekwon Davis and saying that I agree with you there. I think he might have peaked very early on in his career and maybe has plateaued a bit. And teams, I think they're going to do some digging on that. He's a guy that has had some off the field troubles in his past, especially earlier on in his career at Alabama. So I don't want to say he has plateaued just because I think there may be more in the tank with him, but it definitely is concerning with how his pass rush production has really fallen off a cliff ever since his sophomore year. Going on his junior year, he only had 1 sack, I believe it was. And then this year, the results have been the same for the most part. And I thought he played well in the South Carolina game, even though it didn't show up in the box score. But you just want to see that consistency out of him all the time. And we just have not seen that from him. And he's a name that really is starting to fall, I think, in a sense. But like you said, with another huge showing in this game of this magnitude, I think he could help himself a lot. It could go a long way to helping himself in April as well.
Yeah, and we talk a lot of the time about ascending players, right? Like Leighton Vander Esch coming out of Boise State, really a 1-year starter who came from 6-man football, who's really just starting to learn the game, right? You keep seeing him get better and better every year. And then you look at the opposite of guys like Christian Hackenberg at Penn State, where he just progressively got worse as his career went on for the Nittany Lions. And you saw it happen in the NFL where he just completely plateaued. And I'm not saying Raekwon Davis is either of those, not in the extremes, but this is a guy that, you know, had his best season as a sophomore, had a chance to declare as a junior, wanted to come back, presumably to win a national title with the Crimson Tide, come back for his senior year, and really hasn't had that same production since his sophomore season. And you see a guy that has all the physical traits in the world, but it just not translating to the box score, you're going to have questions. And, you know, and there's the old thing, you trust the tape, trust the traits, and I am a big proponent of that. But at some point, there has to be the question of why, if he's so talented, why isn't it getting quantified in the box score? And why did he have such a big year, a sophomore year, and just nothing production-wise in terms of sacks the next 2 years? It's just a head scratcher and something that we're going to have to really dig deep on, you know, next spring. But Raekwon Davis continues to be one of the biggest mysteries of this draft class. And if he has a big game against LSU, he can really quash a lot of those concerns. And this is I don't think there's much stock for one individual prospect this weekend than Raekwon Davis against LSU. I think Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa are going to do their thing. I think they're going to at least – I don't see either of those guys having necessarily a bad performance. I don't see them even having a excellent or, like, monster performance either. I think they're both going to do their job and do what we expect them to do. So I think at the end of the day, if Raekwon Davis has a 3-sack game, he could really rekindle his draft stock from, you know, second-round guy, day-two guy, back to the top 20 status, because that production will be, okay, that's the guy we've seen. There's the guy. That's reaffirmation of what we see with Raekwon Davis. But until he does that, he's always going to stick around in that middle range of, like, so talented, but it just doesn't translate, and that's going to bring a lot of concerns for NFL scouts.
And that's what worries you about him. And we talked about him plateauing and really getting better early on in his career, but maybe this is the best that we have seen, and maybe we're expecting something that's just not there with Raekwon Davis. So him against Lloyd Cushenberry in this LSU offensive front is definitely something we will have a close eye on. Also, some other matchups that we talked about, Joe Burrow and how he matches up against this Alabama Crimson Tide defense, and also the LSU wide receivers and Ja'Marr Chase and also Justin Jefferson, and how they match up with Trayvon Diggs, Patrick Surtain, and also Xavier McKinney. So keep an eye on all the matchups that we talked about today. But that is our show for today, of course. Thank you for tuning in. And it is the weekend, so we won't see you again until Monday. But there is an important game on Sunday night. And Jonah, I'm not sure if you remember exactly what that game is, but it is the Vikings and the Cowboys. So should we make a wager on this, or how do you want to do this?
Listen, man, whenever I don't watch the Cowboys game in my home base, now let me give some context here. The last two times I watched the Dallas Cowboys game, I've been at AT&T Stadium and I've been at my old family's house watching it with my brothers. We've won both those games in blowout fashion. So I'm headed back to Dallas to watch this Vikings game. I am not returning back to my Lubbock home base to watch this. I'm going back to Dallas, where all my family lives, and we're going to watch it together, and we're going to see Dallas blow out the Vikings.
So it's going to be a blowout.
I'm a superstitious person. Whenever Texas Tech made its big championship run in basketball, I watched the entire tournament, each game, with my friends at my house. Each game we won. Then for the national championship, I was not with my friends and not on my house. And we lost to Virginia in the championship in overtime. Heartbreaking. I still blame that loss to this day on myself. I'm a very superstitious person. And when something's going right, I don't want to change the status quo. I'm going to Dallas to watch the Cowboys game against the Vikings Sunday night. And we're going to blow you guys out. Bottom line.
So you heard it here first, folks. The Cowboys are going to blow out the Vikings. But I think this is going to be a good game, just because the Vikings usually don't play well against some of the upper echelon type of teams, whether it's the NFC or the AFC. We saw it last week against the Chiefs. Without Patrick Mahomes, they weren't able to go on the road and get the victory, whether on the road again in Dallas in a hostile environment. And it all comes down to how Kirk Cousins plays. And we just don't know which Kirk Cousins is going to show up. But if good Cousins shows up, the Vikings will have a chance to win this game. But if the bad Cousins shows up, and the guy we've seen really go into his shell in primetime games, this could be a long afternoon. But I think my Vikings are going to pull it out. I'm confident in this, and I'm going to be happy on Victory Monday when we come back on the podcast. So definitely keep an eye on that matchup, as me and Jonah definitely will be going against each other, and I'm sure there will be some text messages exchanged during the game as well.
Hold on a second. You're not going to just get away saying Victory Monday and nonchalant ending this podcast asking for 5-star reviews. What's going to end up happening here is we're going to put a wager on this game. What do you want to wager on the Vikings beating the Cowboys?
I'll leave that up to you.
Oh, hey. We'll discuss this off air, and we'll figure out. We'll leave it to the imagination of the listeners to figure out what the punishment is on Monday for the loser of this argument, because the Cowboys are going to win this game. I'm sorry. Now, the X factor, speaking of LSU Alabama, the X factor in this game is going to be Danielle Hunter against the Dallas Cowboys. I think that's going to be the X factor in this game. But at the end of the day, I think Dallas's offense is just too much. And I think they're going to end up winning this game 35-17.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference. I have it. I'll say 24-21. I think the Vikings are going to pull it out on the last second field goal to break the hearts of Dallas Cowboys faithful once again.
Look at us with our fan goggles on right now. You hate to see it.
Of course, but you heard it here first. The Vikings are going to beat the Cowboys on Sunday. You heard it here first on the Locked On College Football Podcast. But I am Jordan Reed. He is Jonah Tools. Thank you guys for listening, and we are signing off. Make sure to leave a 5-star review. Subscribe to the podcast. We will see you guys on Monday after the Vikings victory.